Welcome to the Existence Podcast, a storytelling podcast. I'm your host, Steve Lubetkin, and in this program, a conversation with Steve Pender, the founder of Family Legacy Video in Tucson, Arizona. Steve Pender is a personal historian and video biographer. He's been writing, editing, producing, and directing video and multimedia programs for business, corporate, and not-for-profit clients for more than 36 years. His work has garnered numerous awards, but the project of which Steve is most proud is a family history documentary featuring his grandmother. Producing the program left him with a passion for helping those with little or no video expertise celebrate their family stories on video. He founded Family Legacy Video in 2003 to do just that, specializing in high-quality, custom, personal legacy videos for individuals, families, and businesses. It's also a bit of a reunion for Steve and me. We first met each other when we both worked at college radio stations in northern New Jersey. He spoke with us over Skype from his office in Tucson. Steve, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome, Steve. My pleasure.
Great. It's great to reconnect with you and talk a little bit about something that's a common thread for both of us, the production of personal histories and tribute videos. How did you get started producing family history video?
Oh, well, you know, I was lucky to come at the family history, personal history business kind of from a very positive experience, I think, in a position of gratitude. I was the firstborn grandchild in my generation, and so I had kind of a special relationship with my grandparents, and in particular my paternal grandmother, who her name was Alice Rita Morrissey Pender. My dad's side of the family was fairly extended, so there were a ton of aunts and uncles and cousins that I didn't often see, and my grandmother Pender was kind of that golden thread that ran through the family quilt, you know, and touched every piece of the quilt. She knew where everybody was, what they were doing, probably where all the skeletons were buried, you know, that sort of thing. And as I was growing up, I heard just a lot of great stories from her about her life. She was born in 1911 in Staten Island, or on Staten Island, and so she had early memories of the goings-on around World War I, and then, you know, moving into things like World War II and the Depression, and events like the opening of the Holland Tunnel and all the ticker tape parades. She had a grandfather who was on the police force in New York City and stationed at City Hall, so he would take her into the city all the time. So a lot of great stories from her growing up. And anyway, time went by. I began a career in video, worked for a PR company for a while, and then went off on my own freelance. And around about 1995, it started to dawn on me that, you know, Graham was not going to be around forever. I was lucky enough to have her well into my young adult life. And by that time, we had, you know, a ton of cousins and, you know, more grandchildren, even some great-grandchildren by that time. And I realized, you know, they would never know my grandmother the way that I'd known her. And so I started thinking about what I could do to preserve her and her stories so that future generations of the family could benefit from them. And of course, being in video, that's the direction I went. And I was very lucky at that time to have had a long-standing relationship with one of my corporate clients. And you know, these were still the days of tape-to-tape editing, the big million-dollar editing facilities. And, you know, we didn't have the technology we had today with the desktop editing and all that. So it wasn't as easy to do a project like this as it is today. So I approached my client, asked them if I could borrow some of their camera equipment and lights and also use their you know, their editing bay when nothing else was going on, and they were only too happy to let me do it. So I collared a colleague of mine to run camera and asked my grandmother if she wouldn't mind sitting for an interview, and she was only too happy to do it. We sat down in 1995 in my apartment in Clifton, New Jersey, and taped about an hour's worth of interview with my grandmother. And I asked her a lot of the stories to tell me a lot of the stories about the things I'd heard growing up. And, well, I can procrastinate as well as anybody. So the recordings kind of went up on the shelf. I got busy. And it was 3 years later, believe it or not, that finally this little voice in the back of my head started telling me, you know, you better do something with this. So I luckily had some time that summer. I took the tapes down from the shelf, looked at the interview again, decided how I wanted to sequence things, got together with my grandmother. I'd found after doing the recording, she had this box squirreled away with piles of photos from her younger days. And so we sat down in the middle of her living room, took all the stuff out of the box and actually talked about the photos and labeled them. So of course, they didn't have any labels on them, so we wrote on the back of the photos describing what was on them, so I took all that material back and put together what still is a video, I think, of which I'm most proud, and that's the story of my grandmother's life. And that hour's worth of material, I kind of got it down to about a half hour, and threw in all the bells and whistles like you would on a big budget documentary, music and some sound effects and lots of photos. And unfortunately, she died not too long after the video was completed. So the first time most of the family saw it was at the repast following her funeral. And I can't tell you what a roller coaster of emotions that day was. But it was a celebration, a real celebration of her life. And I was just so thankful that I'd done it and handed out all the at that time VHS tapes to everybody who came. And the neat thing about it was, or has been, that in the years since, that the video has legs. You know, people keep telling me, and my family keep telling me how much they value it. And one of my aunts, you know, my grandmother's oldest daughter, says, you know, when she misses her mother, she plays the video and she's alive again, you know, things like that. And now that the younger kids have grown up over the course of the years, I know a few of them have even brought the video into school. They use it as part of history projects. And
sure, everybody does the family tree project around fifth or sixth grade.
Exactly. The aunt that I'd mentioned, she's involved with the Senior Citizen Center. She brings the video there to try to inspire folks there to create their own stories. So when I saw the impact that had on my family, it really got me started thinking about, well, gee, how, you know, is this a service I could offer, you know? And at that point in time, I think the economics worked against me. They're still not easy now, but it would have been way too expensive. But technology has brought the prices of things down a bit. And at any rate, to try to wrap up this end of the story, we my wife and I moved to Tucson, Arizona in 2000. And unfortunately, it wasn't too long after that that 9/11 happened. And so that got me started thinking again about all those stories lost and connections severed. So it was again a little while after that, maybe a couple of years, but I went ahead and started a family legacy video to help folks, to help individuals and families, even organizations that didn't have the video expertise that I had, to help them create their own stories on video as keepsakes and legacies for future generations. And so that's what where my passion and my focus has been since.
It's such a special treasure to have something like that, because too many families wait until it's too late. And what you end up seeing at a memorial service or a funeral is, you know, a thrown together slideshow of a few pictures that someone found in a shoebox in a closet, not a person talking about the experiences that they've had. How do you convince people that they need to think about producing some kind of a video testimony?
Well, One of the ways I do it locally, at least, well, and I've traveled to do it a little bit, is I give inspirational and informational presentations to groups, one of the things I talk about during those presentations are the benefits that come with creating these kinds of legacy videos and even autobiographies. Some folks that may not necessarily want to appear on camera or might not have a budget for a larger video, audio is still a very, very valuable option as well. I show examples of basically what these kinds of videos look like. Because even in this day and age, when video is all over the place and there's all sorts of documentaries on television and whatnot, a lot of folks still don't make the connection between their personal stories and these documentaries. In other words, Ken Burns does his documentaries on these big picture things, world events and what have you. But there's no reason that you can't create your own documentary about your own life, and a lot of folks don't realize that that's possible. So first of all, I let them know that that's a possibility. A lot of people I find, especially the seniors today, the greatest generation and that sort of thing, they're reluctant to talk about their own lives. They might think it's bragging. They might think that they might not have much to say. But what I try to impress upon them is that everybody has a story. Every story is important. And one of the things I stress, especially for folks who think that, well, okay, this might be an egotistical thing to do, I don't want to talk about myself. Well, think about the grandkids. Think about your grandchildren. And think about the fact that, I bet they have had ancestors that they would like to know more about. A great thing to ask folks is, well, if you had the opportunity, what would you ask your parents or your grandparents, and realize now that you've got a younger generation or a potentially younger generation who at some point in time are going to want answers to these very same questions about who you were, what life was like when you were young, what were the struggles that you overcame or the successes. That's where I try to steer folks to think about how these kinds of projects can benefit younger generations. Now, that's not to say that, you mentioned a very good point earlier on that a lot of people don't think about this until it's too late, and then they throw together these projects for memorial services and funerals. And I don't want people thinking that these kinds of projects are only meant for their memorial service,
Well, no, it's always nice for people to be able to review the story with the family.
Exactly. Because, number one, it really is, as I mentioned with my grandmother's story, it's a way to celebrate your life. One of the reasons I don't want people to wait too long is that, we want you to be around for many years to be able to enjoy these with your family, view these projects with your family. Because another thing they'll do, other than the fact that you're sitting down and having a great time celebrating this storyteller's life, learning some stories, is that it, without a doubt, they always spur more conversation. So especially the grandchildren, they'll watch something like this and they'll come up with more questions. So it really stimulates great conversation with the family and even more reminiscing as years go on. They do help bring families closer together. I had one of my clients a number of years ago, we created a video biography about her life, and it was initially only meant for the immediate family. Well, word leaked out to the cousins, and suddenly they're getting requests for, 20, 25 more copies because the rest of the family wanted to hear these stories. And a lot of them hadn't known a lot of the information that was included in the video biography. So my client starts getting phone calls from the cousins, So that's another very important benefit, I think, is that it also helps to bring families closer together.
So let's talk about some of the practical aspects of producing a family history video. What are the kinds of stories that make for a good interview? You've probably heard a lot of different stories, but what are some of the ones that you found to be the most effective?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, and you're right. I've heard a ton of amazing stories over the years. I would say there are a few kinds of stories that come to mind. First of all, stories that evoke say, a bygone time or place or way of life. Certainly, we know with the pace of change just in our lives that life a generation or two ago was quite different than it is today. And so especially the grandkids will have, you know, no conception of a time when maybe the only form of communication was a telephone, you know, there was no TV and that sort of thing. So the games you played, the kinds of things you did on your free time, important news events during your youth, those kinds of things that really evoke a bygone era. I think that those are great to hear. Stories that add dimensions to the lives of ancestors, folks that maybe current generations only know as faded images in old family photo albums are also terrific, you know, because they provide a link, but to those prior generations. So, I can give you a quick story, personal experience of mine. When I was preparing to create the video about my grandmother, I had taken her to spend a little time with one of her sisters, one of my aunts, and they were sitting down reminiscing a little bit and talking about my grandmother's upcoming video, and they got on the subject of a great-grandmother of mine, her great-grandmother Deering, who was my grandmother's grandmother, you know. And so my aunt peeps up at one point and says, "Oh, isn't she the one who set the fires?" And I thought, what? I heard this and I thought, fires, great grandmother? I've got to find out more about this. So I kind of butted in and asked about the story. Well, it turned out, you know, she didn't set any neighborhoods on fire, but she was a little bit of a firebug. You know, she would put cans out in the back and burn things, and she would cook my great-grandfather's steaks, and she'd put a put them in like a little griddle, I guess, and go downstairs to the old furnace and put them in the furnace and cook them that way.
Was this just because of her background coming from another country and being accustomed to cooking that way? Or?
I bet that probably had something to do with it, you know. But she also liked fires because, okay, you know, my grandmother said she lost a dollhouse once and, you know, it went into the can in the backyard, you know.
What are some of the things that people should collect? Artifacts, photographs, other documents, things they should put together when they're preparing to do an interview?
I think that anything that helps to prompt memories and that can also be used to illustrate and enhance a story, these are great. Now, first, the obvious things are photos. Now, they can be used as great memory prompts, but photos aren't the only thing. You may have newspaper or magazine clippings. You may have birth certificates, death certificates, other kinds of memorabilia like medals and awards and things like that. So really, anything that can be used to spur recollections that can be, and that can also be scanned or shot either with a video or a still camera and can be used to help illustrate the story are great. There are also things like diaries, written memoirs. I worked with a family last year. One of the videos I created for them focused on the life of a great-grandfather who emigrated from Scotland in the mid-1800s. To the United States. The reason we had material to work with was that he wrote an autobiography. So we were able to use that to provide a structure to the video and a great source of information. And even audio. You may have music recordings. One of my clients, her grandfather was in a band, you know, and so and they actually recorded some of the music. So that was used as an element in the video. And even spoken word recordings of any kind. Or I had another client whose wife, as a young girl, had sung and created a record. You know, there was a traveling record company at that time that came into town, and so she went and she sang. And so that was something that we were able to incorporate. So those kinds of things are great prompts for stories, but also can be great elements in a production.
When you're weaving the story after you've done the interviews, is it better to have it be laid out chronologically, or do you tie it to a theme that came up in the conversation, or is there some other approach? What's the best way to do that?
A lot of what I do is very custom, so whether the approach is chronological or whether it's thematic is going to depend on what I learn about the storyteller and the kinds of stories they want to tell. Now, one of the critical steps that I take very early on when I'm starting to work on a video or even an autobiography is what's called a pre-interview. And this takes the form of a casual conversation, could be over a phone. If I'm lucky and they happen to be local, we'll sit down face to face and we'll have a chat. And this kind of helps break the ice, but it also gives me a chance to ask them questions about their lives and about the stories they want to tell. And then I use that information, I take that information back and use that to craft the questions I use to evoke and elicit those stories. So, for instance, someone may be very, very interested in telling the whole arc of his or her life, from earliest memories of their parents and grandparents through school, career, what have you. But I've also worked with folks whose stories really just revolved around themes. So one lady comes to mind. She had stories related to the weather or to vacations or to her career, but they weren't the things that she wanted to talk about didn't really fit into a chronology, so we just grouped them by theme, and that's how we presented them. There's no strictly right or wrong way. It really all depends on what best applies to the storyteller I'm working with.
What about the differences in age groups? Do you use different questions with different age groups?
Everything is custom that I do, so really I don't go in with generic questions. I kind of do my homework, and this is what I would advise anybody to do, even if you're working with your own family and you think you know it all. Believe me, you don't. So spend some time with the family member you're going to interview first beforehand, and chat and ask some probing questions and see if you can find out some more stories, things that you may not have heard of before, or maybe you haven't heard all the details about before, and then use that information, incorporate that into your questions. So I guess it all again goes back to that pre-interview. I ask questions that I know are appropriate to the individual, and there are no really generic questions that apply to, say, this generation or necessarily that generation.
And do you normally interview people in their homes? Are they more comfortable there, or do you take them to some other location that might be meaningful to their life story?
I offer folks the opportunity to record wherever they're most comfortable and where it's most meaningful. The vast majority have been in their homes because that's where folks are comfortable. And, I don't want to take somebody into a kind of a sterile studio environment, because the home or it could be a place of business that may figure prominently in someone's life. These are part of the story, and they speak to the storyteller's life as well. So those are the kinds of places that I like to record. But I'll we'll record wherever someone feels comfortable. But generally, it has been in the home or in the business.
So in all of the interviews that you've conducted, what are some of the most memorable revelations you've gotten from people you've interviewed?
Oh gosh, I've. There have been some amazing stories. One fellow comes to mind who really wanted to focus. He had this incredible business career. He had gone to Peru around 1940 with a partner. They had just graduated college, and they thought they were going to make a killing in Peru and show the Peruvians a thing or two. And they just embarked on this odyssey and splitting up, traveling throughout the country. He went into the Amazon jungle with a guide, wound up living for a while with a tribe in the jungle, believe it or not. And luckily for him, they weren't headhunters. And it was during this experience that he discovered an agricultural product that later became the foundation for his agricultural empire, and so he eventually he and his partner wound up making their fortune in Peru. But it was real amazing seat of your pants, Indiana Jones kind of stuff. They were just amazing stories that speak to, his sense of adventure and resilience. I had the pleasure and the honor to interview a gentleman a number of years ago who was a B-17 pilot in World War II, and flying out of England. Again, hair-raising stories about the things that went on during the war. But both he and his wife as well, had survived the Japanese occupation in the Philippines. And so she had amazing stories to tell as well. So stories that speak to their resilience and the way they deal with dealt with the struggles in their lives and overcoming them. And these are great stories, too. One thing I meant to mention earlier on, these stories of struggle, stories of success are also very, very valuable kinds of stories that speak to younger generations and show them that they can overcome the difficulties in their lives and also inspire them to achieve as well. You know, I'm actually working on a video biography project right now, another family out in California, some amazing stories about business success and taking unexpected career paths, you know. And so it really goes on and on and on. It's really, I think, every time I hear stories like this, I'm thankful that we recorded them because I know that the future generations are really going to benefit from them. But gosh, they really inspire me as well, you know, when I hear about the kinds of things that folks have accomplished in the face of great odds sometimes over the years.
Well, it's great information, and we hope it will inspire some of our listeners to start collecting the stories and start talking to the family members. We thank you very much, Steve, for taking the time.
Oh, gosh, Steve, it's been a pleasure, and I truly do hope, you know, I one of the things I always tell folks is that everyone has a story, so don't wait. Tell yours.
It's a great advice, and we appreciate you taking the time. Steve Pender is a personal historian and video biographer. He's the founder of Family Legacy Video, which can be found at familylegacyvideo.com. He's a board member of the Association of Personal Historians and the Catalina Rotary Club of Tucson, Arizona. He joined us over Skype from his office in Tucson. And now, a word from Existence.
Thank you for listening to the Existence Podcast. If you would like to hear more from Existence, please subscribe. You can also follow us on Twitter at Define Yours and on the Existence Facebook page.
For everyone at Existence.com, this is Steve Lubetkin. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you out there on the net. Take good care.